Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another week of Warrior Connection. This is Doug Rocky, and tonight we'd like to open the lines to everybody that's out there listening. So the whole show, we're going to talk about the effects of war, health and environmental effects of war, what's happened to you individually, what we see happening today with the current things. So the phone number to call in this evening is 888-874-4888. And we want everybody to call in. Anybody's got an idea, suggestion, observation, please call us tonight. 888-874-4888. There's been a lot of stuff happening in the last week or so, and I think it's important for us all to talk about it. Denise, are you there by chance?
I am, and, you know, as usual, I'd like to start with remembering one of our ones that served in the Gulf War that has died.
Who was that, Denise?
The last 3 days, I just pulled up a couple to mention. They're a little bit older than our 40-year-olds that I get all upset about, but they're still one of us that may have lived to the, you know, old age. We have Robert E. Smart, known as Bob, age 58. He was a Stanford resident, passed away suddenly on March 12, 2012. And he served in the Gulf War, the first Gulf War, Operation Desert Storm. He was a communications person and working as an audiovisual technician. And his service will be Monday, March 19th in Stanford, and we want to remember him in our thoughts, our prayers for his family. And like I said, you know, this may seem an older age group when we have the ones in their 50s and 60s. We're talking about you and me, Doug.
Yes, we are, aren't we?
But yet, you know, if they didn't have the exposures, you know, an added risk factor, as I've said, they may have lived to 90, you know, and been with their families longer and productive members of society. I'll give you one more, okay? There was three that I pulled up. Sergeant James P. Navarro, U.S. Army retired. He was 64 in San Antonio. And loving husband and father, proud veteran, served in Vietnam and Desert Storm. Got that double whammy, probably, from exposures. He was awarded the Army Service Medal, Overseas Service Medal, Army Achievement Medal, Third Oak Leaf Cluster, Army Good Conduct, Army Commendation Medal, Third Oak Leaf Cluster, Non-Commissioned Officer, Professional Development Ribbon, Combat Infantry Badge, Driver Mechanic Badge, Bronze Star Medal. Okay, we get up to the good ones here. National Defense with Bronze Star, Service Star, Expert Badge with Rifle and Grenade Component Bars, United Vietnam Cross of Gallantry with Palm, Vietnam Service Medal, Vietnam Medal with 3 Bronze Service Stars, and the Meritorious Service Medal. We join in remembering him with his family, and it doesn't list any cause of death or anything else that would give us a clue. But, you know, just because you're in your 50s or 60s or even early 70s doesn't mean that, you know, we shouldn't be concerned on Gulf War illness and exposures. And I just use them, and we honor them by remembering them and keeping that effort on to take care of our veterans.
That's really important. Now, what is the, just real quickly, what is the update on the notification and record and letters to Congress?
Yeah, a quick update. We were working that on the House side. And a reminder, when we work these Dear Colleague letters, it is a signature, not a vote. It's a first step to get into the probes issue. And so we were gathering support from representatives that were Democrat and Republican. We had a real hard time with the Republicans getting on board, but we ended up with a record number to sign on. It was 59 or 60, and they're scattered across the country. We had a real effort going on by veterans and, like, Anthony Hardy, myself, veterans that their names got on, you know, unrecognized sometimes. We had non-deployed veterans with Kelly Staples. We had family members. We had our Gulf War vets all calling in, making those phone calls to the Hill. And so we gathered up total, you know, with Kachinik as our sponsor, was 60, many more than we've had in the past. So we're at least, even the ones that didn't sign on, I think got a lot of phone calls, and we could multiply that effect. The next thing that we'll be working on by phone calls and emails is when the Senate Dear Colleague letter is out and circulated to the senators, all 100 of them. We have, you know, another small window to impact and talk to them about the need to sign on and support the veterans. Try to get some very good research and head for treatment. As you and I know, they're all alternative treatments, holistic treatments, herbal treatments, environmental medicine treatments that will help us, stabilize us. But we need to really understand what's happened and see if there's some way to stop it and be more prepared, not only, you know, for helping our current soldiers that are being impacted too. We have them coming home with these symptoms. So we have to keep that awareness going that it's not just the Gulf War vets that served in theater. This is a large number when just the Gulf War vets in theater that one, it's very close to one in three have put claims in, and whether they've been denied or gotten portions of it, that's a pretty good number.
We're looking, I mean, the Department of Veteran Affairs acknowledges right at 300,000 out of 650,000 have now submitted claims.
Right.
With Desert Storm alone, and we look at Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, we got 750,000 already been discharged from medical care, and the latest estimate is 1.3 million of OIF, OEF, OND vets. So it's incredibly costly.
Yeah.
One thing that, you know, I think we got to come back. I mean, there's been a lot of events that have happened in the last week. I mean, incredibly significant events. Two major events in Afghanistan, everything everybody's heard about this, and let's open this up, and I want people to call in, too, if they're listening again, 888-874-4888, and invite everybody to call in. But the first thing we had was the Bagram prison and the burning of the Quran. There's been a lot of stories. When you look at the actual report that came on down, the Army report, from my understanding, reading the actual Army report on this, what had happened is the prisoners in Bagram prison were exchanging messages via the Qurans and other books in the Bagram prison library. And in order to prevent that exchange of information and stop that communication line from happening within the Afghans in there, within the prison and outside and everything, they seized the Qurans and everything and then burned them. So that's my understanding. Again, that report was posted in Army Times. The other information came down through the Army chain. That's really what happened. So when they come down and they're talking about saying, well, it was just an error or somebody didn't know what they were doing, no, it wasn't. So we have a deliberate burning of the books in order to prevent a communications line from being open. And we can discuss operational security and everything else, how it comes into play. But again, if we're sitting there trying to win hearts and minds and provide freedom of access, freedom of information, when we start censoring information, we're far worse. So we have that, and it's important to understand and what really happened there. Check it out for yourself. Look at it and find out. Again, today on the morning talk shows, the candidates are saying, you know, they're talking about the numbers of casualties, and the numbers they gave were just incredibly way off, not even close, really, really low. And they're also, again, making a statement on the burning of the Quran, which is an accident. Now, the other thing that's happened, and again, this comes into play, and it's the latest stuff up at Army Times again, is trying to alleviate or relieve responsibility for this horrific slaughter of the children and civilians in Afghanistan over this last week. And when we look at this stuff, one thing we have to come back and go back into the mind of all of us and where we've been and what's happened. As the war was prepared and all this stuff together, it comes from a 1998 directive to overthrow the Taliban because of the oil pipeline. And that's where it all started. Again, it had nothing to do with 9-1-1. We need to understand that when you really dig into it to find out what happened. Where were the operation directives? So you had everybody made out to be horrible. And just like in Vietnam days or going back to World War II with the Japanese or the Nazis in Germany or whatever, you totally demonize your enemy, totally demonize the other individual, the group that you're going to invade or occupying or trying to suppress or whatever you want to do. And so that's what's happened in the internal briefings I've seen, participated in. The demonization of the Afghans and the Taliban and all Afghans was absolutely atrocious. You talk to an individual, you look at the response up there right now, and it's almost as if we've got to call. I mean, I go back to the Vietnam days, and, I mean, the saying was, kill a commie for Christ, or kill them all, let God sort them out. That was the sort of attitude that was prevalent. We're seeing the same thing. We're seeing it through history. We're seeing, again, the same thing with Iraq and Afghanistan. And so this individual, when I look at it, and I go back and I really stop and think, and Denise, you can chime in here anytime. This guy was doing what everybody else would do, the John Wayne, the Rambo attitude, how bad they are, what we got to do is we got to stop them. And he went out and he did it. Now, where's the responsibility? That's something we have to figure out. They brought him back to the United States now. He is at Leavenworth in high security, supposedly. But again, the story's up in Army Times right now, or again, individuals are trying to cut him slack. In other words, PTSD, all this other stuff, this is what happened. We have to come back and say, what right, what justification do we have it for anything? And what accountability does this individual have to have? And that's something that the two leaders of the nations are going to have to decide.
And, Doug, I think we have to look that a lot of the ones that have gone over the line and done horrendous things, both overseas and here, came from that Joint Forces base out of Washington.
Oh, that, I mean, the Joint Forces base up there is just atrocious. We look at,
and so we have to look at,
this isn't the first murder they had over there. They had another entire platoon that went hog wild and murdered a whole bunch of Afghans, too, and they were actually put on trial and basically let go. You also had a whole bunch, and this several years ago, if you remember, we had the guys took the Army equipment, literally got the Army equipment off the base, went out and robbed the banks, and then boogied it into Canada.
Yeah, and then the one that was a sniper in Washington.
Correct.
That killed a lot of innocent Americans.
So you've got a real
and,
problem.
You know, we could go back and connect others to that base. So I have to look and say, we need to focus on what's going on there to evaluate our troops. And, you know, this one had served, what, four tours Iraq and his first tour in Afghanistan. Repeated deployments are, you know, just eating us up alive, I think. And
correct.
Then if you're not, if you're the doctors there, the nurses even have a role here. When they're seeing these troops, we really need to look closely, pay attention to them, give them the care they need. And that doesn't mean just psych PTSD. It means get fMRIs done. Get the brain scans done and see what's going on. I mean, they're not using the latest technology that they could because, yes, it's expensive. But, you know, if you see, you know, we've talked about exposures and how that's showing up in the brain, and I paralleled that to, you know, seeing a patient from a car accident come in and they'll have a concussion, edema, inflammation. Now, they're healthy. They haven't had a lot of exposures. They've just had this one incident, a civilian. They will recover, you know, but you'll see them, their behavior is just not with it at that point. They're you know, irritable. They're not easy to deal with for the family. And you just think, well, it'll be okay. He just needs to chill out and rest. No. And you know, they need to be monitored and the right testing done. And if they've got brain damage showing up, we need to hold them and not send them back over there.
There's too many individuals that have had that. I mean, there's indication this one guy did go nuts. He already had TBI, so there's no doubt there at all. That, again, doesn't, you know, relieve him responsibility for what happened. But the other thing we know that's happened up there at Madigan, in, you know, joint base up in Seattle, is the commander's been relieved because they literally altered and denied PTSD diagnoses for hundreds of individuals.
But it was down as psychosomatic and every other thing, somatic, and just, you know, pushing it off and pushing the vet off when they need help.
Yeah, it's a very important thing, too. And you know, again, you know, for everybody to understand, both Denise and I have, you know, multiple wars and continue this battle on and on. So both of us have the physiological problems within the brain. That's a given. We're both up at the War Injuries Clinic. They verified that. But then we have the PTSD, and we're dealing with another one, what all of us deal with, the ethical and moral dilemma. So we've got the PTSD where all of us go from, you know, tranquility to peeing our pants scared, you know, in a nanosecond, back and forth forever. And you and I have both been through this, Denise. I mean, you told me when you landed originally in Riyadh, you landed in the middle of a Scud missile attack, didn't you?
Yep.
Your plane is landing when the Scud missiles are coming in, and you're going, okay, how do we get this airplane out of ground? How do we get to safety so we don't get hit? That's what happened when you were landed, didn't it?
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, here's the stuff that we're going around and around and around. And we know both of us have the incredible problems with neurotoxic exposures affecting the brain. So we're looking at the other thing. Now, another one Denise and I have both and others have worked with, and thank God we had several benefactors that were working with us. And Denise, I think just wide open to say, we have the what we call the left half, the right half, the brain crisis. And Dr. Ruth McGill, who again has testified before the VA and National Academy of Sciences, DOD, Carlson Center, I think everything under the sun, has been dealing with this left half, the right half, the brain crisis within the military warrior for what, 40 years?
Yeah.
Probably. And she is both a physician and a psychiatrist, so one of those has a total understanding of this. And what we have talked about and worked with and trying to work through ourselves is the fact that the ethical and moral crisis, and that's really important because Denise and I go back to Vietnam. We talked to all the Vietnam vets, and again, the Vietnam vets are part of our life, and Desert Storm was in the current thing. You have the ethical and moral dilemma where you're trying to look at the rational and reality and what were the real justifications for the war. We know in Vietnam the Gulf of Tonkin incident didn't occur. We know we were told didn't happen. You know, and I personally, you know, dropping bombs out of B-52s, 38 missions, was a nightmare as far as the number of accountability of deaths we had from the enemy on the ground plus friendly fire. But we're dealing with this stuff. And then we get to Desert Storm, and we find out that was all a subterfuge again. And then we get to Iraqi freedom and enduring freedom again, a subterfuge. And so the individuals are given over there, they're hyped up, they're John Wayne, they're Rambo, we got to kill, they're going to come after us. And it's continuous. I mean, within the infantry, in my 3 years as a combat medic in the infantry. And Denise, you've worked with the infantry ad nauseum, I think, as a combat nurse on the front line. That whole attitude is inbred to yourself. You got to get them, and this is what we need to do at all costs, no matter what happens. And then it happens, and it has happened again, over and over again. Denise, any thoughts?
Well, you know, my sympathy goes out to his family really strongly right now, because all indications he was a good person from neighbors and people that knew him directly. And they said, this is not who we knew. No, war changes you. No matter where you are, whether you're up there, you know, with a direct attack, or like myself at Log Base Charlie receiving patient flow and a lot of Iraqi EPWs at the time, it impacts you. Going back when we retrograded back to KKMC and going over to the Army hospitals across from the tent city where the Air Force was and seeing the Iraqis that were not really the enemy. I mean, Saddam's army was doing terrible things trying to get, you know, their people to rise up and fight the Americans. And to see the young children that were damaged by the Iraqis' own troops, it stays with you for your life.
You know, we've got all of this stuff happening, it does, and we've seen this for too many years now because of our involvement in the military for so long. But then the other thing what we have, and again, this comes up with the actual reports. I mean, the military, and we've talked about this before, and again, this is a direct article. I'm pulling this out of USA Today, and quote, a dubious, costly effort to win hearts and minds. And the Pentagon has spent millions of dollars, and nobody knows where the money went, you know, information operation to convince the Afghanis that we're there, or the Iraqis were there, or the same thing with the Vietnamese, or the Laotians, or wherever they were there to take care of them and protect them and everything else. But it's just the opposite. We know what's happening, what we're doing, what we're in there. So when you come down, you have to really look at what's happening. So you got this millions and millions of dollars being spent to convince the Afghanis that we're there really to help them, and now this is not the first time this has happened. We've killed men, women, and children, and we've had airstrikes where we've airstruck and destroyed entire wedding ceremonies. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And again, this is part of the fog of the war. Understand this, but again, what has really happened? So we got all of the effort, public affairs effort, you know, psychological operations to convince the Afghanis that we're on their side and really there, and they're going, wait a minute, you invaded our country without justification based on total lies. You've killed men, women, and children. You thoroughly contaminate air, water, and soil. You refuse to clean it up, and you tell us you're here to protect us. It doesn't add up. So what is happening, and this is what's happened to me personally, and Denise, again, you've had the same thing. We're having to deal with left, have to write moral and ethical implications within the brain. That we need help for. You need a trained combat chaplain. You need somebody that's trained at the VA or DOD that wants to deal with these issues. I mean, the Marines now, again, are looking at the ethical and moral dimensions on their soldiers. I mean, this is coming up into the PTSD diagnosis. This is brand new.
Hey, Doug, this is Will here in the PRN studio. I've got good news. Patricia Axelrod has called in and is ready to join the conversation with you.
Really? Fantastic. Great. Patricia, are you there?
I sure am. How are you?
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Patricia Axelrod. For over 40 years, she has been a veteran service officer and advocate for the veterans across this nation. And she is, ladies and gentlemen, if you're academia, a MacArthur Foundation scholar. Now, that's kind of one step above Rhodes for those people who don't understand academia. And, Patricia, I mean, you've been involved in working with veterans and trying to get medical care directly for veterans and working with their physicians and their commanders for, what, 40 years?
Doug? Well, actually, let me just correct that. It's 30 years. I'm old, but I'm an old broad, but I'm not that old.
Hey, Pat, I'd like to remind you that we met way back at my first trip into D.C. at the NIH conference on the health consequences of the Gulf War illness.
I remember, Denise, of course. How could I forget you? How are you?
It was a dynamic meeting, and I will never forget you ever in my life, how dynamic we had that meeting going.
Oh, indeed. As an aside, let me just fill your listeners in. This was the first public meeting of the discussion of Persian, what was then called Desert Storm Syndrome, and is now called Persian Gulf War Illness. And even back then, and I believe that was either 1994 or 1996, I'm not sure.
1994
it was. And even back then, they were doing everything in their power to silence the truth of the effects of war. And in this case, as it concerned Desert Storm, and you may remember, Denise, and I'll just fill you in briefly, listeners, they were so intent upon silencing the truth that the MPs attempted to eject me from the building. Do you recall that, Denise?
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And Walter Blank was then in charge of this entire discussion as it concerned...
He was a Surgeon General.
He was a Surgeon General, that's correct. And he had served in Desert Storm, and as an aside, he knew all about the exposures.
But that's because Andras Carnegie Bopp had told him entirely because they were in-laws. And Colonel Bopp was on Bowers Raiders, member of our team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And as we speak and as we talk, if veterans are listening, and I know you are, or if people who are mothers, fathers, brothers, sisters, friends of veterans, I hope you'll join in to this discussion. And I know, Doug, as I came in, you were talking about PTSD. And as we know, this is not new. You know full well that this has plagued our soldiers from the beginning of warfare, all soldiers. As an aside, let me tell you what's going on right now in the battlefield over in Iraq and also in Afghanistan. Sadly, the powers to be recognize that PTSD is a problem that's going to affect battle and is going to destabilize soldiers. They understand this. However, what they're doing is treating soldiers in the field with a technique called EMDR, which is a form of hypnotism that, in fact, is supposed to, like, place a Band-Aid over the problem of PTSD so that, in fact, these soldiers who are shell-shocked, that's what we used to call it, right, in another war?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. These soldiers who are sickened by what's going on, frightened, terrified, don't want to go on, are in fact being hypnotized into going back to war by eye movement, distancing, EMDR. And what I'm saying to you is that they realize full well what's going on. So they're drugging them. They're doing everything they can to keep them going. And sadly, the rules of engagement are such that this encourages the kind of conduct that unfortunately went on in Afghanistan. So the bottom line here is that we are not only killing our own over there, but we are sadly driving our soldiers crazy. We're driving them mad. And we really need to stop that war over there, and we need to bring them home as soon as possible.
Patricia, while we've got you on, I mean, you not only have worked with the veterans as a veteran service officer, but weren't you the scientist that did the work with the Patriot missile system?
That's correct, I was.
Could you explain that briefly?
Yeah, my MacArthur grant was a research and writing grant, and I received the grant. I would characterize myself as a military scientist for peace, and I analyzed the electronic battlefield from the satellites to the ground radar, and all of the weapon systems in between, all of the radars, all of the firepower, all of the warheads, which is how I got into NBC, I might add, nuclear, biological, chemical weaponry, and how I began to learn about the AFEX. But briefly, as it concerned the Patriot missile and all of the weapon systems that are out there now, contrary to what people have heard or think about weapon systems, unfortunately, they are not safe even around our own soldiers or around civilian populations. And during the Gulf War, people who were over there may recall that the Patriot missile was accidentally firing. And I essentially, working with the Armed Forces Committee and a man called Joe Ciricione, who is now in charge of the Plowshares organization, somebody you know, I know, Doug, I designed or suggested a fix for that, which involved hardening the missile system against stray RF, radio signals, microwave signals, stray electromagnetic radiation. As an aside, every weapon system that finally debuts on the battlefield has been on the drawing boards for 20 to 30 years, and I know you know that, Doug. And
I think we're going into a break right here.
Sure.
We're going into a break, Will?
I hear the music.
Yeah, we need to take a short one here at the bottom of the hour.
Okay. So anyhow, yeah, so the whole much. So we're looking at a whole complex factor. Now, when we start looking at all these effects with PTSD, the health and environmental effects of war and operations, it's extremely critical, mm-hmm. as we've all talked, to get thorough medical care from, you know, licensed physicians that understand that, again, interdisciplinary care. And again, one of the things also that we're finding out, especially with the incredible neuromuscular damage and everything, that the massage therapy is also extremely important. But again, discussion I know Patricia and I have worked with, and she's done it on me as an expert, is looking at acupuncture.
Yes.
And
looking
you've
at
worked,
new
you've
ways.
Worked with the VA physicians actually preparing and recommending and setting up care for individuals.
Yeah. We have to look at different ways and means to go about treating our soldiers. The standard traditional Western approaches are not effective, and sadly, once again, and I say sadly, the VA is not doing their job. And here's an interesting little fact, or billy-do. The administrators of the VAs are, in fact, offered incentives to stay within their budgets. And so, therefore, and their budgets are small. They're not sufficient to begin with. So if they authorize treatment over and above what they anticipate should be the cost of treatment should be that should be expanded on each veteran, then they're going over their budget. So in fact, the administrators of each VA are provided with incentive not to go over their budget, and if they stay within their budget and if they go below their budget, they are allowed to divvy up those leftover funds so that they can take this as a bonus. So we are working against this as well.
So here we got the same thing where we have alternative methods of treatment, but the cost comparison between using those alternative methods of treatment and medications and pharmaceuticals and pain relieving drugs, they're going to choose the drugs over the treatment. Is that what you're seeing?
That is exactly what I'm seeing. And the unfortunate fact here is that, and we all know this, and people who are familiar with the VA and their function know that, unfortunately, it's cheaper to bury a veteran than it is to treat them. And that's a horrible thing to say. But the bottom line is that this is the mindset that we are contending with. Veterans have always been expendable. They've always been considered cannon fodder. And they are, in the minds of the Department of Defense, they are a part of a weapon system. They're just part of a weapon system, and they're expendable. And as the powers that be decide to go to war, they do not factor into the cost of war the cost of caring for our veterans. So if we look at, for instance, in Afghanistan, we were spending $10 billion a month. At one point, we were spending $1 million a minute to fight these wars. As we have this, as we talk about this, just stop to consider how much is being expended in war. And I can assure you that there is not one percentage of that that is considered to be in the considered for the cost of treating our veterans. And this is the truth. And vis-a-vis traditional Western medicine, which is something I consider to be wholly ineffective in the treatment of our veterans, because if we're contending with neurotoxins, and we are, we're contending with radioactive weaponry, the effects of so-called depleted uranium, which we know is not depleted. We're talking about chemical weaponry, as can be found in Iraq, and I'm not talking about even that which was used during Desert Storm. I'm talking about the fact that the Iraqis and people who are using, nations that use chemical warfare agents, use persistent viscous material in them so that they will stick on the surfaces and thereby continue to deny terrain.
Well, isn't just conventional explosives, and I can go back to some of the EPA work, conventional explosives, the byproducts with conventional explosives have incredible toxic properties, and they're not all destroyed in a detonation, and so they're spread, aren't they?
Yes, that's correct. So the fact of the matter is that our soldiers are not only contending with PTSD, they are not only contending with the direct effects of weaponry, not only contending with accidents and so forth and so on, they're being bombarded with a host of neurotoxins, and they're already toxic. So now if you introduce all of these chemicals, these drugs, which is routine, what you're doing really is you're keeping the soldier sedated, you're keeping the soldier controllable and malleable, and so therefore it's in the best interest of the VA to drug our soldiers into nothingness.
Don't we have the other problem, too, with the soldiers who are on duty because of the duty requirements and the amount of time they have in the inadequate sleep and rest? I mean, there was a lot of reports, I know, with the pilots. They were actually issuing amphetamines.
Well, yes, and during Desert Storm, I might add, the use of pyrostigmine bromide, PB, was, in fact, acting like speed.
Denise, you were up in the House, and it was a senator of the House testifying on PB when all that blew up, weren't you?
I sure was. I don't think Congressman Steve Boyer was very happy at what I'd put together.
Explain what happened there.
Well, it was one of the House Veterans Affairs Committee hearings, and it was leading up to, I think it was before the RAM report came out, or maybe it came out at that time, and Dr. Ghulam was there to present the RAND study on the PB. And the background on Dr. Ghulam is I know that Dr. Baumschweiger, that we know.
Oh, yes.
God bless Bill Baumschweiger.
Had really worked getting information to Dr. Ghulam. And Dr. Ghulam was involved with getting the RAND study correct. And she did a good job. And she has since continued to help us in doing studies to find ways to help the Gulf War veterans. But I presented my testimony and included the factor of when they started getting protostigmine bromide pills that we started having some ill effects shown to that.
As I recall, Denise, people actually were frothing at the mouth as they took that.
Yeah,
PC.
They were. In the actual medical literature for the U.S. Army, the Medical Management Chemical and Biological Casualties book, the course, and Denise, you use this in the hearing, actually states that over 50% of those involved that took it were sick with pesticide poisoning.
Well,
and you brought that up, didn't you, in the hearing?
That's when I brought it up, and that's when I could see his little face get tight, and I could feel that I was going to get attacked on questioning.
And, he's an 05 or an 06. Where, 05 or 06?
That was probably, I would imagine, in that time period. I can't remember the date exactly, Doug, but he did really go off on me about that. And, I'm sorry about that, but that was the facts.
But he was a lieutenant colonel or a colonel at that time, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Well, pyridoxine bromide is used for the treatment of myasthenia gravis, which is a neurological disease, and you know that, Denise. So if you give that to a healthy person, then it is bound to affect this person because this person doesn't have myasthenia gravis, and therefore it becomes a neurotoxin.
Yeah,
you know
the purpose
that.
Of
well,
PB.
And not only that, but a one dose fits all sizes, and even females taking it. You know, that you just can't. It was beyond thought pattern of why they did that. And then you combine it, not only the PB, but the promethium that was impregnated in our uniforms.
Yeah, another poison.
And
another
here
pesticide.
We have sweat, heat, your pores are wide open. So it's like putting an ointment on your skin and sweating, you're going to get more of the effect. And to this day, I can't be around any pesticides or spraying of trees if they have promethium, which they consider safe. That's when I get brain fog and, I'm going, what hit me? I can't function.
Well, I think there was another thing that came in here, and all three of us again, Mikey Kilpatrick, our best buddy up at DOD, where the buck stops today. When we started getting the reports again that they were issuing flea collars and soldiers were wearing flea collars around their wrists and their ankles and their neck to prevent, the bugs from getting in. Now we got the flea collar, and this is made for a dog because they don't sweat. And now they're wearing them on there, so the human being, the soldier, is getting this pesticide directly absorbed through their cells right into the body. So now we've got a whole combination. We got the pesticide exposure, we got the flea collar exposures. In Desert Storm, we had the PB, we had the other stuff.
You
had
the oil well fires, you have chemical weaponry, you have sarin, you have mustard gas, you may have had some soman. You have a host of toxins, and the fact of the matter is that what Denise is describing is the reaction of this. It's called multiple chemical sensitivity, MCS.
Now, Denise, didn't you on the front line, weren't you seeing aberrant behavior right off the bat with soldiers?
Well, I started seeing the aberrant behavior when we were there at Riyadh, and we had scuds there, as you know, Doug.
Yeah.
And,
I have 32 scuds over my head blow up. We changed from, B.J. Thomas raindrops are falling on her head, the scud parts are hitting on my bed, I actually kept the parts.
I mean, you're sitting out there, we had we were in one of the high rises. We were only there 7 days before moving forward to KKMC. But we had the Scud alerts, and I'm sitting there going, well, you know, if it hits our building, where do I want to be and where do I want to take the troops? You know?
The alarms are going off.
you're thinking all the time when you're in the zones, okay? And so we had a Scud attack, and then all of a sudden somebody reported a tool chest that was suspicious. So, okay, we're going to leave the people outside until we get somebody in to investigate that. And so we're outside. We'd had our chem suits on, our gas masks, you know, the whole deal. And, of course, we had gotten the all clear, so we're standing out there, and we've taken off the gloves and the mask. And I'm sitting there going, why am I feeling this moisture on my face? We're in the desert. And what is that weird smell that I'm hearing, that I'm smelling? And I'm, you know, those are things that were happening at Riyadh that were unusual, the unusual smells. And, I mean, you know, we're in a desert. You know, I've been out to California deserts before and elsewhere and never had that weird smell.
You know, that weird smell, and we know they had the chemicals. And, again, Denise, you know all these people. Colonel Herb Smith, Dr. Colonel Green Beret Colonel Herb Smith,
Colonel Andres Porty Bath
and Rungi, they confirmed the chemicals at those locations,
yeah.
And they're dead.
But no, let me finish. And Colonel Herb Smith is still with us, still doing fine.
But yeah, Andres and Jim are not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad he's still with us.
But I will tell you what I started noticing is weird behaviors there before I even moved up to KKMC or Log Base Charlie. And these were people that I'd known from my unit for years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just weird behaviors. I could not put my finger on what was happening. No one was telling us the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here, we're the medical people, and you would think you'd want to tell the medical people what's going on. But no, we were the little lambs out there to, you know, experience this. But I remember this kind of weird behavior, the weird accidents that occurred, you know, from just clutchiness.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, as the war progressed and we were at another location, the reports of people going out on the Trips or Us tours and picking up a bouncing Betty, you know, to bring back to their chin. I'm going,
you know, what you're describing here, what we're in the conversation, this goes back to the current events, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When the brain has neurotoxic exposures or has a traumatic brain injury, and remember the traumatic brain injury, you have to have the spinal injury all the way through cervical and thoracic spine on down. But we're looking at the time where the brain does not function in a rational thought process.
Well, we're looking at these toxins that cross the blood-brain barrier. And so, therefore, if you're inhaling, for instance, a chemical agent such as sarin, you're inhaling that, and that would be because your mop gear and your masks and so forth were inadequate and leaked, and that's going up through the cribriform directly to the brain. So you're going to have almost immediately an effect. And all of these toxins that we're speaking of store in the brain and in the liver and in the fat cells.
And then how does alcohol affect this?
And so, yes, and alcohol, of course, compounds all of these problems. Alcohol crosses the blood-brain barrier, so does sugar, for that matter. But when all of these chemicals are in the brain, are in the body, you have something called kindling that occurs, and that means that these chemicals compound and make other compounds, like daughter products of these chemicals. So that therefore, when you introduce in the treatment of multiple chemical sensitivity, as we will refer to it if we wanted to give it a diagnosis, as we speak of this, if you introduce additional drugs, which is the traditional treatment by the VA, so the psychotropic drugs, all of these things that are intended to eliminate the symptomology, then you're introducing yet more chemicals, so you're compounding the problem.
Well, we know from the psychotropics, a lot of the psychotropics have a tendency to increase suicides, and I think there is some record on that the fact that individuals have this been more susceptible to suicide, and then they go over the edge and a suicide occurs or childhood spouse abuse occurs.
Well, and going back to my thing of the unusual incidences, we had irritability showing up. People that were the best battle buddies, getting in fights with each other.
That's a PB effect early on.
And it was insubordination occurring. I mean, I was sitting there going, what am I seeing here? This is weird. And it wasn't PTSD. And, you know, that's the way I was able to connect it for Shades Committee. I said, you know, they're saying no acute signs. Yes, we did have. We just didn't recognize it as such.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like a concussion. And in a normal person, the inflammation, you know, will go away. They'll be back to their normal self. It's somewhat similar to that, but the damage is there.
Well, I think the other thing, too, and again, reported on our team, and you both have seen us, again, who am I? How did I get here? Where am I going? What am I doing? And so, I mean, like in the case of Sergeant First Class Ronald Off, my partner through all this goes back to Vietnam, Desert Storm. He was literally Schwarzkopf's medic, as you know, and taking care of Schwarzkopf. He was the only medic big enough to give him the shots that he needed because they're both the same size. We were visiting some friend's house, and not only in a block away from his grandparents, and he was totally lost.
Mm-hmm.
And we've heard these reports over and over and over again, or you're sitting there, and what will happen, you guys know this, and Dr. Kelly McCoy has documented this thoroughly up at the War Injury Clinic in Washington. You'll turn on the water and forget about it. You start doing something. You're cooking. You forget about it.
Sure,
or you don't remember even your family's names or your relatives' phone names or your phone numbers.
Well, yes, and why don't we articulate the symptomology of that, which is called euphemistically Persian Gulf War illness, which will in great measure affect the veterans of Afghanistan. And so those symptoms are as follows, and if I forget any, I know you'll both pop in there. So there's rashes, there's headaches, there's short-term memory loss, there's chronic body pain, there's nausea.
There's respiratory problems.
Respiratory problems.
Eye problems.
And the dental syndrome.
You know, the teeth are just breaking off and falling out.
That's correct.
The tooth is not decaying.
Ridged
the
nails.
The structural integrity is gone.
Yes, ridged nails are apparent.
Tingling in the arms and...
Neuropathy. Yes.
Right.
Neuropathy.
Tingling and pain. The pain in the spine.
Insomnia.
You know,
the temperature, inability to control body temperature
right.
fluctuations in the arms and the extremities. Huh?
Yes, neuropathy, exactly.
And one of the key ones that Dr. Baumslager and I keyed in on is two of them. One of them is the bleeding gums, nosebleeds out of the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Blood in the urine, blood in the stool, and that has to do with hypercoagulation, which is being studied currently by Dr. Bach at Minneapolis VA. If anybody wants to know how to do and participate in that study, email me, dsnurse1@yahoo.com. But that's abnormal. You go in and brush your teeth, and, you know, you have good dental care, and you have bleeding of the gums. There was a blue line that would show up on some of the gums. There was growth on the roof of your mouth. I've forgotten the name for it. I can't think of it right off the bat. But the other weird one was the smelling things and running around crazy in your home going, what's smelling? It's a odor hallucination because you've damaged the nerve to the senses.
Yeah, the olfactory nerve is just totally damaged.
And, you know, so in the taste mechanism in your mouth, you may have the nickel taste in your mouth, the metal.
And that's indicative of neuroinjury, that metal.
Exactly. And then the ringing in the ear. And I talked about this the last program, because you can get ear damage and have, you know, from loud noises, being around generators, airplanes, without proper ear protection. But to have tinnitus develop so early in these vets, that is an ototoxicity to that nerve of the ear. And otherwise, you'd get it, like I said on the last program, with high doses of chemotherapy. Some antibiotics have that side effect. High doses, continuous high doses of aspirin. But to have it in young people was abnormal. And, you know, those studies never came out showing the abnormalities and the tinnitus and the occurrence of tinnitus. and the occurrence of dental problems.
And let me interject this. We know this to be true of Persian Gulf War veterans, and I fear we will learn this same truth of Afghanistan veterans. Our Persian Gulf War veterans are three times more likely to develop tumors. There is a propensity towards birth defects.
Pat, let's stop there on the birth defects. It's not only the obvious physical, it's the unseen inside the body. And we also have the soft mental type conditions showing in the children of attention deficit disorder.
That's right. That's right. If I could, may I give listeners my number, my telephone number, and let me very briefly describe how I assist veterans. For years and years, I fought with and sought help from the government and testified at a variety of presidential advisory committees and congressional committees and so forth and so on. And at point, I decided, and Denise, I say this with great respect to you, and this is not to discount continued efforts. At some point, I decided the way that I could be most effective was to go one-on-one with veterans to assist them. So the way that I function, and I conduct the Desert Storm Think Tank and Veterans Advocate, which was seeded by the grant I received from John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and it was a research and writing grant in peace and international security and cooperation. At any rate, the way that I work is this way. If a veteran finds me, and I don't advertise, I don't have a website, Doug refers folks to me, and basically it's by word of mouth or people search me out. If a veteran finds me, and by that time they're at the end of their rope, and oftentimes they're ready to commit suicide or they're facing homelessness and they're desperately ill, and what I do is I will debrief them to get an understanding of their MOS and what exposures they may have had. And then what I do is I will tell them to get me their medical records. And I will, and it doesn't make a bloody bit of difference to me if that medical record is a foot high, 2 feet high, 3 feet high. It means nothing to me. And once I receive that medical record, I will plow through it, and I will thereby recognize how well or how poorly this person has been taken care of, and in most cases, it's poorly. And what I will do thereafter is, after I've analyzed that medical record and understand what diagnostic protocol has been applied for the benefit of this veteran, I will then start going nose to nose with the VA, with the physicians who are caring for these, for our veterans, and I will go nose to nose to get them appropriate care, medical care, and a higher degree of service-connected disability. And if I don't get what I need, I will initiate a complaint with the Inspector General's office. I will go directly to the Secretary of the VA.
Yeah, he doesn't like any of us right now.
Yeah, and I will go nose to nose. And actually, let me tell you something. That's what everyone who is caring for a veteran needs to do, is to go nose to nose and stand up. And when you don't, when your veteran or that you're caring for, the one that you love, is not getting appropriate care, you must stand up. You must go nose to nose with those doctors. I'll help you do it. And as an aside, there is an article that was a peer-reviewed article that appeared in International Perspectives in Public Health. It was I co-authored with Dr. Gunnar Hauser, who is a foremost expert in chemical illness, and it is entitled A Profile and a Protocol of the Chemically Injured Industrial Worker and Desert Storm Veteran. It was, I think it was published in 1996.
Now, we're running down here the last couple of minutes.
So I'm going to urge you, please, to find that online, and let me give out my number if I might.
Sure, go ahead.
It is, I have a hard line, 847-362-3658. 847-362-3658. 3658, and I have a cell, 775-412-5980, 775-412-5980. I encourage any veteran in need to help.
Thank you, Pat, Patricia.
Mm-hmm.
Denise, I mean, you know, we're looking at this whole complex mess, and I think as we've talked about tonight, what is obvious that the soldier, whether they be an airman, sailor, Marine, Coast Guard, whatever they have, or health service, they haven't gotten the adequate medical care that they need for all the toxic exposures and the events. We're looking at sending soldiers into war without support systems in place. We're looking at families being destroyed because without support systems. And somehow we've got to get this information out. When we look at all the candidates and discussions they had today, they were talking about the numbers of casualties. The numbers were off by hundreds of thousands, as we know. They're not going to discuss it. And when we say, let's provide the care necessary, they all kind of give it a backdoor talk and say, well, we'll do it, but when it comes down to it, it's not happening.
And it's not going to happen until we all unite, all of us, and march on Washington. We need a veterans march on Washington.
Well, there is a group working on that right now, and I think the date is going to be October 4th, and there is a Facebook page up on that.
Praise the Lord and pass the mashed potatoes. That's great.
So there'll be a chance to march, but we need to continue to keep working on the inside, the outside, the sideways, every which way. One way is the way to go.
Up for the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Again, you've been listening to Warrior Connection on Progressive Radio Network. We're definitely moving forward. We're going into the future. Please join us.